This episode of Startup Stories is brought to you by our friends at Pure Scooters. Save time, save money, and save the planet with an electric scooter from Pure Scooters, the UK's most trusted electric scooter provider. Stay tuned to the end of this show to learn how you can win one of two electric scooters we're giving away in partnership with Pure Scooters.
How can you build a two-sided market? Malcolm Sloan's experience in management consultancy gave him an insight into how to be lean and agile in creating a new venture. He found a problem worth solving, so he just needed to find time in an already busy life to get his idea off the ground. I'm Jeremy Parsons from MagicSubscriptions.com, and today, in Startup Stories with Adam Callow, you'll hear how Malcolm turned commuting and travel time into time spent on his project, and how he solved the problem that the public wouldn't use his sports injury site without a choice of therapists, and sports therapists wouldn't pay to be part of a platform unless the public were already using it.
Malcolm, thanks so much for joining us on mic today. For anyone that doesn't know about you or your business, can you give us a quick intro to who you are and what the business does?
Yep, so Malcolm Sloan, I run sportsinjuryfix.com. It's a free website for the public to help find the right treatment. The average person sees three or more therapists before they find the right one because no one knows the difference between physios, chiros, osteos, sports therapists, etc. But actually what people do know is, well, I'm a runner and I've hurt my knee, so who's best placed to help me? We let the public search in the way they want to enable them to get fixed, not frustrated.
Perfect stuff. And how old is the business right now?
So the business itself has been running for a couple of years. I had a full-time day job, so I set it up as a proof of concept, as a bit of a listing website. But we've been full-time in it since January.
And just to sort of cover off for the noise today, in case there is a bit of background noise compared to normal, can you just explain to people where we are and what you guys are doing here? Because I've just seen the stand. You've got an amazing stand. You've got loads of staff in front of us. What are you doing here today?
So, yeah, we're at the Body Power Expo at the NEC in Birmingham. There's over 100,000 people here. It's absolutely massive. CrossFit, bodybuilding, weightlifting, gym bunnies, jiu-jitsu. It's quite a sight. It's one of those markets where everybody breaks themselves, everybody's got a niggle, everybody's got an injury. So we've got a big 12 meter wide stand full of multidisciplinary therapists just helping people, giving them a massage, giving them some taping to get through their next performance, and just giving them some advice, guidance and treatment.
Like it, really like it, mate. So I want to spend a bit of time and learning about sort of the marketplace conditions that you guys operate in. But I think for the people that listen to this, one thing that's super interesting is, how did you actually go through the transition period of a day job, I guess 3 years ago now? So you did this part-time for 2 years. So how did you manage that? How did you find the time? Because a load of people say, I want to do my own thing, but there's no time in the day. So how did you find that? And then what made you actually make the transition to doing this full-time?
Yeah, so a lot of it is just taking advantage of the opportunities that were there. So I was working as a management consultant for PA Consulting, traveling all around the country, various assignments. So what that meant is, well, if I drove everywhere, then that's dead time.
Yep.
So I made sure that I actually extended my commute and got a train everywhere. It didn't matter if I had to take three changes. What that meant is then I had my own time. So I had at least an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours a day of time that I could just spend focused on the business. Equally, I've got two young kids at home.
How old are they?
18 months and three.
Oh, wow. Okay, so really young, especially when you were... So 3 years ago, you were thinking about doing this business and you just had a newborn.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's really what kicked it off, that classic cheesy thing of sitting there with this newborn baby going, right, I want to see this thing. I want to be part of its life. I don't want to be spending my life 6 days a week traveling around the country doing some interesting work, but actually never seeing them. I want to be part of their life. How do I create a business that gives me control and enables me to be part of their life? So that's really what started the thought process, and it all went from there.
Really respect that, mate. In terms of that thought process of building the business, what were the first steps that you took to actually testing if this is a real problem in the market and one that you could fix?
You can't see me because we're on a podcast, but I'm a really scrawny bloke. I'm made of glass and I keep breaking myself. And I've lived all over. And always found it really hard to find good treatment. So as with a lot of businesses, it was a personal problem that I sought to fix, which was, why, if I'm a a rugby player and I've hurt my shoulder, why can't I search in that way to find treatment? I don't understand the differences to draw the professions. So then it was, well, I'm lucky enough to know a load of sports people that do all sorts of random crazy things. So I talked to as many of them as possible and everybody agreed. And some of it, yes, was that friendship bias, but this wasn't me saying I'm going to start a business. This was me just saying, I think this is a problem. What do you think?
Yep.
And then it snowballed from there. And then it was that, taking the whole build, measure, learn, lean startup methodology, working in management consultant. Obviously, we get trained in all of that agile methodology. Start small, scale quickly, find out what works. So actually, then it was, okay, how can I get access to a number of therapists to see if they want to advertise by saying what sports and injuries they specialize in? Because you go on any therapist website, they say they treat everything.
Yep.
Because they want to appeal to everybody. So this was the days of pre-GDPR. So basically scraped together a load of emails and just put some cold emails out.
And what was in that cold email? Was that inviting them to this new business, asking for feedback? What was the first thing that you asked of these guys? Because this is on the supply side of the market. These are the guys that can be doing the actual the physiotherapy on the patient. So you've got the demand, you checked with your friends, have you got this problem? Tick that box. What did you do for these guys? What was the first interaction you had with them? Did you tell them you had a business at this point, or was it, I'm thinking about doing this?
So as with everything, it was about thinking what's in it for them. Because in my mind, and having looked at a lot of other platform websites, there's some brilliant, really clever technology platform websites, but they don't have either side of the market.
Yep.
So the public were only going to use something if there's choice. The therapists are only going to pay money for something if there's public there and they're getting business from it. So actually, it was knowing that the therapists want business.
Yep.
And actually, they're willing to put their details on almost any website for free, thinking that, well, if I get one customer from it a year, well, at least it's something.
It's been worth my time at that point. Same with my industry. A plumber will put his details anywhere trying to get in front of someone that needs some plumbing work. Same dynamic.
Yeah, so when you know that, it's about tapping into that. So I had a really simple website and just said, right, pop your details on here. But actually, when you're putting your details on here, what I'd like you to do is say, what top five sports, what top five injuries do you have greatest experience of treating or do you specialize in? Just to see if, okay, so it's not just popping your details anywhere, it's about getting that extra information, and will that be a barrier to them and will they not do it?
Yep.
Or will they still do it? What that did very quickly is built up several hundred and then a few thousands.
Yep.
Of these therapists that are putting in that information. That provides email addresses, contact information that actually we can use then to follow up and take them down a bit of a funnel to understand that extra information that's there, understand their problems, etc.
But once you've got that initial, I don't know, 200, 300 therapists, how did you onboard them to actually find out? Was it phone calls? Because at that point, I understand you're still developing the platform out.
Yep.
And you're non-technical, is that right?
Basically, yes.
You're like me. I know just enough to try and get something onto a website, but you needed someone else to go and build the product.
Yes.
Like, how did you get the feedback out of these guys, considering the fact you had no demand right now? They weren't winning work through the platform. So 5 years ago, I tried to build a check trade competitor, and we got 6,500 tradespeople in 2 years to sign up, but we had no homeowners using it. And everyone came to us knocking on a door saying, where's all these leads that you've promised us? And that was the mistake that we made. We said, you're going to win work and it's going to be for free. How did you manage the expectations of the physios signing up? And how did you get them to give you time to help you develop the product?
Yeah. So I was very honest with them and said, this is new.
Yep.
You might not get anything from this from a year, maybe longer.
Yep.
However, I've made it really simple for you to sign up. So it's 5 minutes of your time. And then it's using that language of, well, an average customer, a patient for them, it's five treatments. So that's £250 upwards.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 5 minutes of your time worth the prospect of £250.
Like it. And to be honest on that is, we've revisited our trade directory business and we told them, I need 10 minutes of your time every month. And you're not going to win anything for 12 months, but if we, because we're using it on user generated content to get us to the top of Google. And because we've set those expectations, we're actually really confident and comfortable speaking about the product. Compared to last time, we felt really bad. It's like we've got all these signups but no demand. Yeah. And we have this mismatch of expectations. So I actually love that as a piece of advice for people listening, which is honesty up front, be clear and set expectations. Otherwise, you end up doing what we did, and that to sort of move away from that product for nearly 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And the interesting you say, talk about user-generated content.
Yep.
So actually, that was one thing that I realised, that we had all these therapists with amazing knowledge, but they didn't necessarily have a platform and a way of getting that out. And equally, there's a load of platform businesses that are just listing sites, and they don't help their therapists really project themselves.
Yep.
So actually, there are a load of businesses, event companies, etc., that want good content. They want good content about injuries, but they don't know where to get it. It's a hassle to get it, and they don't want to have to pay for it. So I built a series of partnerships with the likes of UK Run Chat, Men's Running Magazine, etc., and got columns, and then got the therapists on our site to write those columns.
Perfect.
So the therapists, even though they weren't actually getting any leads from the platform yet, because it wasn't really happening, they were getting the opportunity of writing articles and getting published in national magazines or main websites, etc. So actually they felt really happy from that. Other therapists then saw that and went, how do I start writing there? The therapists themselves started sharing that to all of their network and all of their customers, saying, look where I've written my article. And all of the articles were top and tailed of, find your nearest running injury specialist at sportsinjuryfix.com. Sportsinjuryfix.com member Adam, you know, from Adam's Physio, writes about knee injuries, etc.
Yeah, I like it. It's weird. The more we talk, the more I realise how sort of in parallel we're both running our businesses. Because with Verified, we basically said, we can't win in a PPC market. We can't win in above-the-line advertising. Because you've got people like Checkatrade and Rated People spending £5 to £7 million a year. One thing we have got is an amazing community of people that want our product to succeed. So we've basically found the top 5,000 questions that homeowners go to Google for with home improvement. So how much is a new boiler? How much is a new house rewire? And got our community to write the answers for it. And that gets us to the top of Google. So I think it's a great little piece of advice to the guys listening. If you've got a community of people that want you to win, especially if there's no cost to them, like both of our products, is get them to help you to write the content.
Yeah.
So you go and do that, and then you get a bit of traction with the product. This is a fair, I don't want to say it's an extremely complex technical solution, but there's a lot of tech to build here. You're non-technical. How did you then go and find someone to help you build the product?
Yeah.
And how did you fund it?
So I used to work as a civil servant, and I deliberately stepped up and sold my soul to the dark side and went and worked for a management consultancy firm, knowing that that would give me some extra cash to help fund it.
Yep.
And actually then what I did is I treated it that the salary that I was previously on, I kept that as my income, and the extra money, tucked that away.
Squirrel that away, yep.
And again, it's just trying to be as smart as possible. So then I live in Cardiff, so I dropped a generic email out to the top 10 people that appeared on Google for Cardiff web development, because anyone that doesn't appear in that clearly doesn't understand about web development and SEO, so I don't want to talk to them.
Makes sense.
And I actually just said, right, if I've got this idea and this concept, how much would it cost to build? And of course, I got ignored by five of them. You had three of them that went, oh, it'd be £50,000 up front. And then I had two of them.
As you fall off your seat. Yep.
Yeah. One of them went, was just desperate. Come and talk to me, come and talk to me, come and talk to me. It's like, well, look, give me a rough estimate within a £5,000-£10,000 sphere.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm not going to waste my time. My time is really precious. I'm here, there and everywhere, and I've got the young kids.
Yeah.
It's not easy for me just to pop in a lunch hour to chat to you. And then there was one person who actually bothered to respond to my email, answered all the questions really well. And actually it was that beautiful thing of, he was just starting out running his own web development agency as well.
Perfect.
We spent three-hour sessions with each other, talking it all through, planning it all through, and I hadn't given him a penny.
All unpaid, just briefing and scoping it out.
But actually, nice. That was, so you could see it was a bit of luck in terms of the timing, but equally it was me helping talk to him in a way that actually helped his business as well.
Yep.
So having had all the management consultancy experience, then actually in those sessions we were bouncing off each other. So they were working on my business and my future thing, you could see in his mind,
who's getting some value back from
you. You're helping me. This is great. Let's keep talking.
You mentioned it's a bit of luck, but I think most people, even include myself, we've gone through areas where we've hired external web agencies and app developers, and I go and speak to two or three. The fact that you went out to 10 straight away, I think, is something that more people need to do. Just put more sort of dogs in the race and find out who's qualified to do the work. Yeah. So you go and hire this guy, I assume, to build out the product.
Yep.
Then what happens?
They built the product, and actually it was brilliant, and what they built far exceeded what I expected it to be. So I really take my hat off and I'm really grateful. Then it was the perennial thing of they've had the money in, they've had the success in, it's built.
Yep.
Then I'm bottom of the pile.
Yep.
Then I start getting ignored, which gets a little bit frustrating. But equally, momentum is starting to happen and things are starting to build. I'm starting to get on board the likes of Mike James, who's a physio, a local physio, who I brought on board from the credibility of a therapist side to work with me. And actually, it's that stage of, right, we now are really understanding our therapists. We're going to shows with them. We're talking with them. We're getting this user-generated content. We know their problems. Actually, we know we need to build these extra solutions, and they're technical. So, as you said, I'm not technical. I'm starting to have some question marks about what was built.
Yep.
In terms of the technical debt, how secure it is, etc. So I went out and found somebody else to then build the online booking platform and customer notes solution that would ultimately monetize the product. Effectively, to have that person almost critique what I originally had,
yep,
but equally be very honest about the people that I'm originally using to say, look, I've got this other guy in, can you critique what he's doing as
makes
well?
Makes sense, yep.
Keeps them both honest, very much with a view of not meaning to play them off against each other, it was all far more amicable than that, but actually then saying, right, who do I want as part of this business moving forward?
But I also think it's a fantastic way for you, because it's so odd the more we speak. So because you're sort of blind to the code in terms of, is this good quality, bad quality, you talk about technical debt, we've had an agency rebuild our app for 12 months, and we had to pay someone to get a code audit, basically, because we just weren't confident in the build, because we don't know what we're looking at. So you do need to go and play those two off each other to find out, actually, one, is the work good? But secondly, can they communicate why it's not good to have a really good relationship moving forward? Because you need someone who's extremely technical, but to be able to speak in layman's terms of what are you trying to achieve, and here's the best route to do it. So I like that. So what happened off the back of that?
So what happened off the back of that is the freelancer that I brought in was an absolutely phenomenal guy. And he's a classic techie in terms of his brain thinks in a certain way,
yep,
which can make him a bit socially awkward at times, but it's because of that that allows him to be so brilliant at all the coding side, because that's the way his brain is wired.
Yep.
And actually, he'd worked for web dev agencies before that had taken advantage of that.
Okay.
Had bullied him a little bit, had taken advantage of his nature. So he had his really low confidence and didn't realise how good he was.
Okay.
Having done a load of work in cybersecurity and worked with a load of techies and a load of people with autism and Asperger's, etc., I'd learn, actually, if you talk to these people in the right way, they will be the best staff you ever, ever have. And actually, with this guy, we really built him up, got on like a house on fire, to the point that he was said, how do I become part of this? How do I become part of this full time?
Wow.
I'm bought into this. I really like it.
How long was that window from him
that window
first
was about,
meeting to wanting to join the company?
It's 9 months.
Wow, that's cool.
So after about 3 months, I'd pestered him saying, come on, I need you to join.
Yep.
And then, you know, it took him a bit of time. But when you think about it, this was a person that was basically scared to look you in the eye, was really nervous, and actually then he's come on so far to the extent that you can see what an intimidating environment we're in.
Yep.
With a load of fake tanned, probably steroided up me heads.
Yep.
As well as lots of normal people, obviously, but there are some people at the real extreme end.
Yep.
And Thursday evening, James Ateki drove up on his own, came into this unfamiliar environment, loads of noise, loads of random people, and set everything up on his own.
Wow. So the thing that just sort of came into my head as you spoke about that, so that's awesome to hear from him. I kind of get the vibe from you, and so it's like, you're a non-technical guy, but it feels like I look at things with like superpowers. Like, I'm a salesperson at heart. Like, I will sell you the shirt off your own back if I really want to. it feels like you've got so much empathy and skill in terms of, I guess it comes from your background as a management consultant, like the way that you speak about the people and going through your team, what we did do before we got on the mics, would you say that's your real superpower in the business, is managing and recruiting A players into the team? And then on that note, if so, what advice have you got to me and people listening? Because I'm just amazed at how you speak about the team and the team you've pulled together in such a short period of time and how qualified they are. Like, how do you do it?
Yeah, I think it's... I suffer from imposter syndrome quite a bit.
Okay.
And I guess it helps that... So I'm 39 now, so I'm a bit older. So I've had the years where I've been a bit of an immature little twat. And my brother will certainly tell you that. But then it's being self-aware enough just to constantly learn and understand what your limitations are.
Yep.
And you go through that stage where you like to think you're brilliant at everything, and actually then you quickly realise there is always somebody bigger and better and faster and quicker and more intelligent at everything you do.
Yep.
So then, like you say, it's working out, right, what are my strengths? And equally, what are the key things we need for this business to drive forward? And then when you see those opportunities, grasp them. And equally, you realise that most people actually lack a bit of self-confidence. Even the most outwardly confident people lack a bit of confidence.
Yep.
So actually, if you can help them understand what their strengths are and really build them up and build up that confidence, then not only do you get that really engaged, enthusiastic employee, you also get them being really loyal to you and bought into what you're trying to achieve, and they feel part of it. And equally, they start doing that to the other people which they engage with, which is then really lovely to see.
That's cool. You speak about opportunities there, like when you see it, grab it. How do you balance that when you're a young company with a burn rate to think about, when you find like the A player that you're trying to fill, but they might be a bit more expensive? Like, do you take the risk or do you think about burn rate? How do you balance those two things in the business?
So I'm a great believer in always needing to take calculated risks. So yeah, I spent 13 years working in defence and security. And when you work in that environment, you are always dealing, you're never dealing with certainty,
yep.
And you're always dealing with high risk. So you start to learn that actually risk is a good thing. You embrace it.
Yep.
And as long as you've taken the right steps to mitigate the risks that you can, and so you're going into it with your eyes open, well, actually, at times, you just have to grab it. Don't be scared of it. Don't view that as a barrier. And sometimes that can be random. Like, I broke my hip in three places. But what that did is that put me in front of somebody, a doctor. There was the head of medical services for the English Institute of Sport, a guy called Dr. Rod Jakes, the former president of the Faculty of the Sports and Exercise Medicine. This guy is the pinnacle of the people that we want to appeal to, and absolutely we needed to get him on board. So actually, it was that opportunity of to have his name associated with a business is worth every penny that we can. Like you say, this burn rate. So actually, then it's about selling him a vision. So he's come on board as a non-exec director, and in the first year, certainly in terms of the rates he charges, he is getting virtually nothing.
Yep.
But actually, then it ramps up. So a success-based contract.
Well, to be honest, he must have felt sorry for you because you threw yourself down the stairs three times to break your hip to get in front of him. So he's probably thinking this guy's committed to doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was obviously a really, you know, exciting, scary thing I was doing. Definitely wasn't on a little fold-up Brompton bike and quarter pedal. But we won't talk about that.
No, it's absolutely some top advice. Yeah. What's the thing that keeps you awake at night right now in the business?
It's just... I'm incredibly impatient.
Okay.
I want everything now. But equally, because when you start thinking about opportunity and start trying to grab everything that's there, then every single day, it sounds a bit corny, you're always thinking of new things you want to do.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. And even just the chat we had for half an hour before, it's like, oh, okay, that's some interesting points. Right, we could do that, we could do this, etc. And then it's that worrying in your brain of there's all these things we could do, but equally knowing we can't do all of it. If we try to do everything, we'll spread ourselves too thin, we'll run out of money. So actually then it's that, right, how do we prioritise this effectively, and how do we learn to say no? Because sometimes saying no is really hard, but it's the most important thing you need to do for your business to keep it really focused.
No, all right, absolutely top bit of advice there. We like to end these shows with some fast fire questions. My biggest problem is I always want to follow up with the questions. Are you up for doing some fast fire stuff?
Absolutely.
Cool. Let me just pull out my questions for you. So, number one, what's the one thing you know now that you would tell your 18-year-old version of yourself?
Don't be scared of asking for what you want. If you don't ask, you don't get.
Big believer in that, to be honest. That's how we're here today. We're like, we want to interview.
Yeah, well, equally, to be fair, it was that thing of hearing Harrison talk previously about body power, and us there going, right, we're coming to a show, we don't know it, we want to maximise the publicity that's there. Right, Harrison, do you want a free ticket? Come along and let's have a chat.
And then he came to me and was like, do you want a free ticket to body power? Bring them on.
Yeah.
He's been like a kid at Christmas about this, to be honest. What's the number one tool, service or hack that you use to get work done that other people might not know about? I think I've already heard it, to be honest. So I'm going to answer this one for you, but if you've got a second one, let me know. Even if you can drive somewhere and it's 2 hours and it's 3 hours on a train, get on a train.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm now already thinking about it. I was like, that makes so much sense. I can get my laptop out. I can get my time back. Even if it's a little bit more expensive, but you get 3 hours to do some work, makes sense. Have you got anything else like that, or have I just answered it for you?
You certainly have. It's definitely a tip before. I think one of the other things is nowadays, people get bombarded with thinking, I need to use Slack, I need to use Trello, I need to use you guys Monday, etc, etc.
I pull that face when I think about Monday as well.
And actually, I would say the best thing possible is getting the relevant team around and just having a conversation. Communication is the single biggest reason why businesses fail. So actually, sometimes strip that all back and just have a 10-minute chat in the morning and keep it to 10 minutes.
Yeah. We've tried to implement our all-hands meetings on a Monday, and they started off really concise at an hour long, and they started to bleed into one and a half, 2 hours, and then people started to resent it because it's taking too much of the working day. So that's something that we desperately need to work on. And do you know what? Just selfishly, off the back of this, I'd love to invite you up to our office and just get some advice on management, because it's the biggest thing that I struggle with in the company, to be honest. So open ticket up, free meal, pay for the train ticket, get some work done. Happy days.
Let's do it.
What's the best piece of advice you've been given, and who gave it to you?
So my brother, Andy Sloan, told me there are these two guys that have a podcast in a slightly different area to you, but listening to them sounds very similar to the conversations that you keep boring me with. So rather than boring me with these conversations, listen to their conversations and get in contact with them, because you can probably learn quite a lot from each other.
That's amazing, mate. Yeah, super appreciate that. And one of the best things that we've come out of doing the show is meeting guys like you, because I'm a first-time founder. I like getting to come and pick your brain and get you to the office and help with some management. Like, it's just about meeting good people and helping out. That's going to be a soundbite for the show, that is, Harrison. This is one to tap into your brain, actually, in terms of what you said earlier. It's about saying no to stuff. What was the last thing that you looked at and said, I could make a business out of fixing that problem? What was the last business opportunity that you saw that was nearly going to pull you away from focusing on this full time? Or has there been nothing since you started the business? If you weren't doing this, what other problem would you fix?
I think about that. You know, there is no one thing. From right when I was younger, I always had people telling me, you should start your own business. You should start your own business. You should go on The Apprentice. You'd be brilliant at it. I did the Barclays grad scheme. And in the first 2 weeks of onboarding, I had two trainers come up to me and go, I'm not sure why you're here. I don't mean this in a rude way, because you're clearly really, you know, you're smart and you're capable and you've obviously done well to get here, but you're just not like anybody that we normally have coming here. And it was one of those strange things of just, because I had people telling me I should start something, I almost mentally blocked it out and went, well, I don't want to do that. It's particularly when you're younger, you want to conform and fit in a bit.
Yeah.
And so I had all these people telling me to break away and do my own thing. And bear in mind, this is at the time, there was none of these podcasts and startup things. Startup wasn't really a thing. Entrepreneurism wasn't a thing.
Wasn't cool. You're unemployed back then if you're an entrepreneur.
Exactly. It was still that, get a job with a big business. Yep. Oh, here I am with a job in a bank. You know, on the grad scheme with Barclays Bank. Wow, you know, that's what loads of people want.
Just out of curiosity, what did your parents do?
So my mum was an orthodontist part-time and helped bring us up. And then my dad was a finance manager for a large construction company.
Okay.
And still very much it was that... I can't ever remember them actually telling me, but I always had that feeling, there was that expectation of, you will work for that big business.
Yeah.
And certainly working for a big bank, my dad was super proud. He loved coming up to the city and having a lunch with me.
Okay.
My brother worked for a big city law firm at the time as well. You know, my grandfather bought shares in Barclays and was really happy about how they were doing. So you kind of feel that pressure to stay there.
That's why I asked. From the way that you spoke about it, I got the sense that from a young age you had that, I'm going to conform. And also, everyone, I think, naturally tries to follow, they either heavily go against what their parents did because they don't want that life, or they go, no, this makes sense, these guys are happy, they're doing well, and then you follow that journey and you want to make them proud. So I ended up actually, half of the reason I joined the forces, I didn't stay, I lasted 4 months, it wasn't for me. My dad was in the Navy, so that wasn't for me. But then my dad was also, he ran his own business for 45 years. So I was like, well, I want to do that. That was my way of making my dad proud. So it's weird how things happen. Next one for me is, if you could recommend one book or podcast excluding ours, what would it be?
I'm going to be cheeky and say two. Lean Startup by Eric Ries. And equally, The Trusted Advisor.
I haven't heard that one. Is that a book or a podcast?
It's a book, and you can get it on Audible. But actually, I don't think you need to read the whole book because there's a lot of padding there.
Yeah.
But actually, there's an equation in it, and you can just Google Trusted Advisor Equation. Just read about that a little bit. And actually, what that talks about is just, it's everything we're talking about before, about how to build up a relation with people and get the most out of that.
Yeah.
It nails that to a T.
I'm going to grab that today and go and have a listen. Last two for you, Malcolm. Who's had the largest impact in your life?
In recent times, probably the man that's just taking photos of us to our right.
I'm trying to like hold a strong jawline right now, so it looks good.
So real meeting of minds. A guy called Mike James, had a massive presence on Facebook as the endurance physio. And actually, again, he was someone that he came along to one of the shows that we did. And I looked at him and went, wow, he's got 25,000 followers on Facebook. He's got 20 years experience of working as a physical training instructor in the military, turned strength coach. He's got a sports rehab degree. He's then got a sports science degree. He's then got a master's in physiotherapy. He's done over 100 marathons, ultra marathons, Ironman. He's done a double Ironman. He's done a treble Ironman. He's swum the Channel. He's represented Team GB at age group Ironman
triathlon. I need a nap after just hearing about all that.
Yeah.
Man's been busy. How did you get him into the team then?
Literally.
Because he's full-time, right?
Full-time, yeah.
I'm pointing at him thinking he's still there. He's no longer
gone.
There. He's also like Batman. He just vanishes. He's full-time in the team now.
He's full-time in the team. But again, that was just you don't ask, you don't get. So he was a therapist that signed up to the site with a cold email. And then I saw his profile. So then we spoke and I said, oh, you probably got some interesting things. Would you like to write this article for Men's Running Magazine? And he said, actually, yeah, I would. And then, okay, would you like to come along to the National Running Show? Yeah, I would. And then we got chatting over a beer there. Turns out he lives in Cowbridge, which is close to Cardiff where I live, so it's quite local. Okay, let's just keep in touch. And actually, it was that kind of bit by bit. Oh, do you fancy doing a little bit more? Do you fancy doing a little bit more? And actually, then he beat me to it. He said, you know what? I know you dropped down to 4 days a week first up, and I know you're thinking about going full time. Like, I'm in. How do I become involved in this? And then it went from there.
And then just to pull it back to the question, why has he made the biggest impact?
Because seeing that has just given, it just gave me so much confidence.
Okay.
Around you don't ask, you don't get, and equally that for our platform and in the area that we're in, the two of us and the knowledge we have just represents both sides of the problem perfectly.
Yeah.
There isn't anybody from a therapist side that doesn't respect what Mike does or he can't explain to them really clearly. Equally, if they don't like him and go, well, you're just a therapist side, then the other side of the house and the public, then that's where it really appeals from my side and vice versa. And so actually just the conversations we've had and the power of it has just been brilliant. And equally, he's such a positive person that he's been just so positive about saying, what we've created here is amazing. And don't just listen to it from me. I tell you what, I'm going to introduce you to this influencer. Look what this influencer is saying about it. Look what this key person in the industry is saying. Look what all these other people are saying about what you have built.
I was going to say, it's probably not just the confidence in you don't ask, you don't get, but it's confidence in what you've built. Someone changing career path to join your company, that's a bloody big commitment from them. So I guess for you, that's validation of like, actually, we're onto something here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool, mate. I really like it. Last one. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to a first-time founder?
I would say take the time to really understand why you are doing it. What is it you ultimately want to achieve? If you're just building something because you think it's cool and then expecting it to magically take off, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, agree.
You need to really think, why am I building this? So why for me? Am I doing it because I want to make money? If you just want to make money, then it's probably not going to succeed, because as you always say, doing the startup life is really hard.
There's easier ways to make money than starting your own business.
There are. Yep. And if you ever want to raise money, then they always say a good team can make a bad product work, because they know they'll iterate and they'll find out how it works.
Yep.
And so with that, then you have to have the passion in what you're doing. Whereas if it's a bad team, so if all you're thinking about is I'm building this just to make money, and you're just thinking on that side, then anybody you talk to raising money just won't be interested in you, because you won't have that real passion that will really come across, because you really believe in it and you're willing just to evolve and work hard and find what's right. And yes, that might make you millions. Equally, it might just make you a nice tidy income that means you can live a life.
So what's your why? Why are you doing this?
So I'm doing it because I've hurt myself so often and I found it so frustrating that I want to reduce the frustration for people. I want to help them get fixed. I want to solve that problem. That's where it started. That's evolved then in that we've got so many solutions to help therapists. You were telling me about your sports massage therapist who gets at least 2 no-shows a week. We've got a simple solution that means he gets paid for those 2 no-shows a week. That means he probably earns £100 a week extra, £400 a month. That's over £4,000 a year.
Which has a direct impact to the quality of life of someone that runs their own small business.
Yeah.
So for the guys listening to this right now, whether they are a sports massage therapist or they hurt themselves in sport, where do they go to learn more and use your service?
So quite simply, sportsinjuryfix.com or sportsinjuryfix on any of the normal social media.
Malcolm, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I appreciate the fact that you have battled through the noise and I wish you all the luck at the show and in the future, mate. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Likewise.
Cheers, buddy.
Thanks for listening to this Startup Story. We aim to bring you first-hand stories every week, and you can help us out by rating the show on your podcast provider or head to nbs.fm where you can sign up for sneak previews and more. If you have an idea for a guest for Adam with a startup story to tell, please email your suggestion to jeremy@nbs.fm. Next week, you'll hear how someone on the edge of bankruptcy decided to go all in on a venture that depended on skills the founders didn't have, delivering services that were all but unknown in the industry they picked. If you want to hear how to succeed against the odds, you won't want to miss this interview. So make sure you subscribe to Startup Stories from nbs.fm, and I'll see you next time.
Hey guys, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode of the Startup Stories, sponsored by our friends over at Pure Scooters. Save time, save money, and save the planet with an electric scooter from Pure Scooters. Now it's your opportunity to win one of 2 scooters.
Now Adam, this sounds awfully familiar to me. What was the closing date of the competition?
So it was the 17th of July. But you've reminded me that was the last episode of the season and the closing date was meant to be the 17th of August. You see, this is what happens when you leave me to my own devices and I record an advert on my own.
So that means, guys, that you've still got time to enter the competition and win one of 2 free scooters from Pure scooters.
And we've made entering super simple. Head over to pure.nbs.fm. That's pure.nbs.fm to enter to win one of these two scooters that we're giving away on the 17th of August. We're going to do a live prize draw within our Facebook group. If you're not a member yet, head over to Startup Diary Club on Facebook so you can watch the live prize draw. In case you miss it, don't worry. We will be releasing an episode to announce the winners.
And thanks again to our friends over at Pure Scooters for sponsoring Startup Stories.